We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
What's going on, WNBA fans? You are here sitting courtside with Christy and Gabe. I am Christy Winter Scott, and as always, sitting courtside with my guy, Gabe Ibrahim. Gabe, hey man, my nerves are gone. This week has been incredible in terms of the thrill factor. So many great games and a big, huge dunk. I can't. I mean, it's a lot for me. It's a lot.
So it was all great. Like the last 4 days, 3 days, I guess, I don't know. Like this week of basketball essentially has been tremendous. We had, you know, Brittany Griner's dunk, like you mentioned. We had Alicia Clarendon's almost buzzer beater, then huge clutch shots. We had what I'm missing one in my mind here.
Oh, Kia Nurse.
We had, well, Kia Nurse's thing came later. We had Courtney Williams' game winning shot. We had too much. We had so much stuff going on.
Yeah.
On the women's side, on the men's side, we're still in the NBA playoffs. You stayed up to watch Dame last night. I could not do anything after the Kia Nurse shot. So I missed most of it.
I shouldn't have, but I did.
And you know what? I forgot to mention, we had a big trade that we're going to talk about right now between the Dallas Wings and the Chicago Sky. But also, we didn't talk about before we got on, Coach K is retiring this year.
I know. I'm still processing that. And, you know, just a lot of love and respect for him and what he's been able to do. You know, when he first started coaching, no one gave him a chance. And they were going to fire him 3 years in. And the fact that that was the scenario out of the gates, and now looking back and seeing all of the things that he did for so many men at Duke, including the one, the only South Lakes grad, Grant Hill. I mean, he, you know, it back-to-back championships with him, with Grant Hill, 91-92. I just know things about Coach K in terms of who he was as a coach for Grant Hill. And that's saying a lot. I mean, he has obviously great parents in Calvin and Janet. But I tell you what, that's a third parent for Grant Hill and Coach K and what he was able to do. And not just winning championships, but just molding teams. And you saw what he did with USA Basketball and just his basketball acumen and just the togetherness factor. You can't understate that. And yes, the X's and O's, magnificent, very strategic, very tactical, but it all boiled down to them doing it together. So a ton of respect going Coach K's way. And, you know, obviously was in the ACC when I was a player back in the day, and you know, just reveled in watching and learning, watching his teams play and then coaching, you know, on the collegiate side and just seeing how he was able just to mold so many different players together. Not a lot of people can do that and sustain it. Some people can do it for a minute or two, right? But the way that he's been able to sustain that for 30 plus years, come on, man. I mean, come on. Just hats off, shake his hand, ton of respect for Coach K.
Yeah, I can't stand Coach K. I respect him. I think that's the greatest compliment you could pay to someone like Coach K. I can't stand them because my teams, I rooted for Maryland. I rooted for UNC in basketball, yeah, obviously, in addition to Miami growing up. So like we had to play him a lot and it was not fun. And I think Coach K is also like he's like those teams that he coached when I was growing up, early 2000s, like they could come back from any lead. And they're the reason why psychologically I'm always worried about a basketball game, no matter what the score is. Like any, and we're going to talk about this when we talk about the key inertia, any game can be won. And I remember the first time I learned this lesson was a Duke team coming back from like 12 points down with a minute left against Kentucky. That game changed me forever because I was like, how is that possible? The math doesn't work out. And you learn that in basketball, it's not all about the math. It's not all about the X's and O's. Sometimes it's just a little something. And Coach K always gave that little something, as much as I can't stand him, because I do. I know a lot of our listeners can't either.
Oh, I feel you. Because, you know, I thought you were going to say they were down 10 or 12 or whatever with a minute left at Maryland, because I was at that game.
That was another one.
Gabe, I was at that game and it was like 4,000 degrees in Coalfield House. Mm-hmm. And I was there watching the game, you know, pretty much about three rows behind the Maryland bench, sweating bullets. It's so hot in there and it's crazy. Maryland's up with a minute to go. Fans are jumping and crazy. And I'm like, I have to be here at 6 a.m. tomorrow for workouts. I'm leaving, right? Because I was coaching at Maryland at the time. So I was like, yeah, let me head out. I got in the car, had a little walk, you know, like a little bit to get to the car, got in the car, popped the radio on just to hear, you know, how the game ended. And then, you know, the post-game interviews on the radio. I was like, I'll just catch it on the radio. And they were like, unbelievable. Duke came all the way back for the win. And I'm just like sitting in the car, staring at myself in the rearview mirror, like, what? Anyway, so I understand what you're talking about. I thought the game was in hand, 60 seconds up 10. And then that was not cute for the Maryland fans that night. But I was shocked when I got in the car and the whole table had been turned and Duke got out of there with a win in College Park. So, yeah, I don't know. There's some kind of magic to that togetherness factor. I'm telling you, you know, it's a killer. And when you get teams to buy into that togetherness and we're all out here with fist balled up, that this is us. We're not high fibers. We're punchers. And we're all together with that strength. Not a lot you can do with it. And, you know, that's why it was more than just that one game. That's why it was the Kentucky game too. That's why it was several other games too. Like they just found a way to always get together. So I'm sure it's going to be very historical, you know, on his last year out, but everyone's going to be giving him his just due. And as tough as it was, it is, I mean, respect, like you said, is what you give.
You get respect, but it doesn't mean I like you. we'll talk about the trade later because I did. Everything you said is exactly what I was thinking about when the Phoenix Mercury were coming back against the Chicago Sky last night, because it's too good of a segue to give up. Because
yeah, let's go.
This game was over. There was no way. Like I looked at the win probability and at with like 2 minutes left, the win probability for Chicago was at 99.6% with 3 minutes left.
Wow.
99.3%. And somehow it was a 10-point game at that point. Somehow Phoenix found it in them to win this game. You know, obviously there's some Chicago missteps, but I think what really made the difference was what the Mercury were able to do, just stay focused and keep chopping wood. And that comes to me, it came from Sandy Brondello saying, look, we're fine. You heard her in the huddle, so it was really cool. She was saying, we're fine. We have time. We have time. Like, don't get out ahead of yourselves. You just need a basket here. You need a basket. And they just kept chopping wood. Skylar Diggins-Smith was incredible. She had 23 points. And she had 24 points, excuse me. And then Kia Nurse gets the ball. She had 15 points coming into that last possession. She gets the ball. They have a timeout. Phoenix has a timeout. And they decided not to use it because Kia didn't stop dribbling. So they're like, well, we can't advance the ball, so just keep going. And then Kia takes a Euro step from the half court line, and just heaves one up and it goes right in. And she said that was the only time she's made a half court shot.
I'll take that. And she's talking about it in practices too. You know, at the end of practice, you're heaving those things up there and she never makes them. She said, I never make them. But my most favorite thing, well, one of my most favorite things about that moment was that right before she was interviewed post game, she checked her bun with both hands and like made sure her bun was right. But I thought that was the cutest thing. But my goodness, Kia Nurse for the win. I was hollering between Kia Nurse and Dame Lillard. I had to get a tea today from Starbucks. I was so into all the games last night. But I just thought that, you know, Skylar Diggins-Smith also was in those huddles saying, hey, we're right here. And Kia Nurse said as much in the post game interview. She said, you know, Skylar was telling us, you know, we're right in it, stay with it. So when you have players saying the same exact thing that coach is saying, Sandy Brondello was saying, I mean, that's a good place to be. And when the players buy into that, like, yeah, we're all right. Like, it might, you know, they hit a couple pitfalls, a little bit of a drought offensively. Mm-hmm. Things weren't happening for them, a little empty possessions, back to back to back sometimes. But when it came down to the winning, you know, they did enough to get the win. And it was smart not to call that timeout, obviously, now retrospectively looking at it.
Right.
But obviously, you know, that's the question, right? Do you call a timeout, set yourselves up and get methodical about execution? Or do you let it flow organically like it did? And I mean, I've seen both ways find success. So and that makes it tougher because when you're coaching, you like to see, well, timeout is the way to go. Or, well, no timeout is the way to go. Yeah. But you just don't know. You just don't know. But that's the beauty of the game. And that's the challenge of coaching. And you just take your chances. I mean, it's either going down or it's not, right? Yeah. And, you know, that was a crazy good look. The Euro took me all the way out. I was like, no, she didn't. Took me completely out. And then when it went in, I get chills right now talking about it, just how she got bum rushed by everybody on the team. And she sat down and it looked like Teresa Witherspoon when she sat down on the floor and when she hit that dagger of a half court shot years ago. Now we're in our 25th year in the league. So Google what Spoon did in that moment, but she sat right down and it just looked exactly like Spoon. And she was just like in shock that it went in and everyone was like all over her. And it was just a moment for Phoenix. And you love to see that, right? No quit. Mm-hmm. No quit in the team. And, you know, Skylar Diggins-Smith is playing her butt off right now. And I mean, she's put up consistent, efficient numbers over the last several games. But I think she's one of the players that doesn't get talked about enough. And I'm not talking about marketing or doing all this. I'm talking about balling. Like, she is flat out playing great for Phoenix, also in the absence of Diana Taurasi, right? I mean, she's out for another 3 weeks at least. You know, 2.5, 3 weeks. So, you know, she knows that her team needs for her to be at her best. And that's what she's given them.
Oh, yeah. And I think it with Skylar, there are not many players in this league that you'd want with the ball in their hands in those clutch situations more than Skylar. One of them is Diana Taurasi because they're on the same team. So it solves that problem, right? But I just think in the last 2 years, this team's been a little bit snake bit, obviously with Bria Hartley's injury, with Brittany Griner leaving the bubble, Diana Taurasi's injury now. You know, they've been a little snake bit with the injuries. I think what's kept them going, and last year they made it to the second round of the playoffs on another crazy shot in another crazy game where they probably shouldn't have won that game and they still pulled it out. Because of Skylar Diggins-Smith, I think, in large part, because of her leadership, because of how calm and collected she is in those big moments. Mm-hmm. And I think this game was just another example of that, of being able to compartmentalize everything and understand what your team needs to do in that moment and kind of let it go as well. Like that's what the challenge, I think, of being a point guard is, understanding like when you got to just let things flow. And they kind of did at the end. They just kind of let things come to them. You know, Megan Walker had this... She had a fast break that was completely out of control and insane. Right. And like, she should have stopped. And, you know, maybe a different point guard tells her stop. No one told her to stop, and she just kept going and she got fouled and she got the line. So I think Skylar's done a really, really great job. And I think she's going to keep this team afloat. Also, Brittany Griner had a quiet 13-7, but it's Brittany Griner. That's what we expect. On Kia Nurse, though, she's having a really great bounce back season. I think a lot of people wrote her off. And she did have she had a really tough last season in New York, where she had an ankle injury. She was being asked to be the first option on this team. And Kia is a great player. That's not her role. So now she's coming back this year, and her field goal percentage and 3-point percentage have almost doubled because of the look she's getting. So I think Kia deserves a lot of flowers for what she's done early in the year, because she's a part of keeping them afloat. And, you know, I the shot was emblematic of what she's done this year.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you said it all right there. I mean, just with the fact that, you know, the roles that players want for themselves sometimes are different than what the coaches want for the players. And I think she has found a level of comfort in Phoenix in terms of falling right into play seamlessly in terms of what Phoenix needs from her. And I think, you know, with her skill set and her efficient numbers, especially this year, as you said, all of her numbers going through the roof and almost doubled in some instances. I mean, how can you like look her in the face and say, you know, you fell off or anything like that? Like there's no such thing as that. There is such thing though, as being in a great situation, having a great fit with a philosophy or how a team is playing and what they like to do. And the way that they're utilizing her is very impressive to watch. No question about it. But when you have Brittany Griner out there as well, I mean, you know, she's steady. She's getting the job done. They definitely miss her presence. Bria Hartley, hopefully she'll be back sooner than later with that ACL from last year. But, you know, everything that I've seen her post or anything like that is always positive energy. She's like, I'm almost back. Can't wait to get back out there. So, I mean, it's just unfortunate that Diana Taurasi is hurt, because I think she was trying to make another run to the USA basketball and the Olympic team this year one more time. And that's why, you hate what happened in 2020. You know, it just takes away opportunities for players. And hopefully she'll be back and she'll be able to compete at that level and with the Olympic team once again. But it's just so frustrating. And I hate injuries just in general. But in sports and the timing of things, it's just so frustrating. And it's something you can't control. So, you know, hopefully she'll be able to come back, obviously, for Phoenix, but hopefully she'll be able to give USA basketball another crack as well.
Well, I think Nurse's play also gives me a little bit more hope that they'll be able to stay afloat for a while. Because I was really concerned about the offense just like kind of cratering a little bit if there's not enough spacing. But I mean, the Skylar Brittany Griner pick and roll is doing just fine.
It's
If you add Kia Nurse hitting shots, you add Megan Walker hitting shots, another player who really struggled last year and is coming into this year playing a lot better. I think you got a team that can stay afloat. And then when Diana Taurasi comes back, I think you got a contender. But we have to see. I mean, it's still early and they're playing a depleted Chicago Sky team. And Diamond Shields was great up until her last decision, which was tough for her, because they just didn't know about there's a play where the shot clock had restarted essentially back to 14, but it was at one and they didn't communicate that, or it wasn't communication. She shot it really fast and gave Phoenix some hope. But outside of that, outside of potentially losing the game for your team, she played great. But on that Skylar Diggins Smith Brady Griner pick and roll, Brittany Griner had another dunk.
I know.
It was the fifth, I believe it was the 15th dunk of her career. She's accounted for the vast majority of dunks in WNBA history. This one was a devious play, honestly. It was an empty corner pick and roll with Skylar Diggins Smith and Brittany Griner against Christina Nigue of the Dallas Wings, and no one came to help. So Brittany Griner had an easy runway to the rim. But I'm interested in what you think of the reaction to Brittany Griner's dunk, because to me, I'm always like, that's awesome. But I'm always worried that we're making too big a deal of it, because it's something that, you know, in our game on the women's side, it doesn't happen that much, and it's not going to happen that much. So I'm just always worried about making such a big deal out of it when we have so much other great stuff going on.
Well, I just think you said it almost right there. You said, you know, it doesn't happen that often. So I think when it does happen, it is a big deal. And it is something for younger girls to watch and see the possibility of that for themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it needs to be magnified and discussed and not just a, like it's a regular play. Cause it's not, right. It's, you know, it's extraordinary and you have to give credit where credit is due and not overblow it because yes, there are so many great things about the WNBA, but at the same time, it needs to be highlighted. It needs to be discussed. Little kid, like 10-year-old girls, they need to see that one day they could do that. One day they could be on the list of names like Lisa Leslie and Candace Parker and Michelle Snow and all these other dunkers who have really made names for themselves in the league. So, I mean, Brittany Griner is just one of many. And she's, you know, she wasn't the first and she won't be the last, right? And Lisa Leslie was the first. So there'll be other players coming behind her, but those kind of highlights, those are inspirational for those kids to see. I mean, and I'd love it for me to see the game evolve that way and to see the dunk become something that has evolved in our game. I think, you know, stand up and clap for that, you know, give credit for that. And yeah, I mean, the rims don't need to be lowered. We don't need, you know, to wear swimsuits, you know, as uniforms to bring people into the games. I mean, the WNBA women's basketball is a beautiful game to watch. Tactically speaking, you don't need to zhuzh it up or do anything to it. And then just let the game evolve organically, like we saw Kia Nurse's shot evolve organically, right? I mean, it's like, just let it flow, let it go, let the game grow to what it can be. And that's in the eyes of the next generation. So give them that, you know, give them that. Don't take that away from those kids who are wide-eyed, not blinking and watching that happen. An empty corner, drive to the rim, that it turns into a massive dunk for Brittany Griner again. Let it be, let it go, you know, celebrate that for what it was. And, you know, she'll get another one and somebody else will get it. I mean, that's what it should be about. It should be about, you know, our game and the evolution of it, our game and the inspiration that is giving the next generation. And, you know, I don't know if you can overdo it or underdo it, but it needs to be done. Like, how about that? You got to talk about it. Yeah.
No, I agree that it definitely should be amplified. You know, I think we understand it and that's all that matters. Like we have, like the WNBA had, like we are gaining fans and that's awesome, but we also have enough of a community here to build the boat of women's basketball. But that being said, she will get a lot more dunks if Dallas does not decide to help off the corner when Brittany Griner has a wide open lane to the rim. Someone go help. Don't just let her go and run and dunk on you. Like, go at least foul her. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, so, I think a couple of the help side defenders made a business decision to get out of the way. Like, yeah, that's a business decision. I'm going to go ahead and head out. No, they didn't step up.
Don't end up on a poster. She had 27 points and 16 rebounds. Jesus. She had 27 points and 16 rebounds and 4 assists because she dominated Dallas. And God, when Brittany Griner is going, I'm not sure there's a more fun thing to me, just because it's like, it goes back to that primal basketball instinct of like, wow, these people are huge. Like these people are very large and I like seeing them do things. Phoenix doing great. Chicago, as we mentioned, not doing great. They are in flux a bit because of injuries to Candace Parker, because Allie Quigley is out, because Stephanie Dolson was at the 3-on-3 tournament. Dolson's coming back. Quigley is coming back. Parker is still out with an ankle.
Yeah.
But they made a move, which was interesting. So the terms here, as our own Richard Cohen of Her Hoop Stats tweeted out, that the Chicago Sky traded Shyla Heal, their first round pick from this year, along with their 2022 third round pick and a pick swap with to Dallas for Dana Evans. The pick swap essentially means that if Dallas, well, it doesn't essentially, it means this. If Chicago finishes below Dallas in the standings, Yeah. So if Chicago, hold on. Now I'm confused.
No, you had it right.
Yeah. If Dallas finishes better, hold on.
Than Chicago?
No. Yeah. Okay. If Chicago finishes better than Dallas, which means they finish with a worse draft pick, then this pick swap does not matter because Dallas is not going to trade down. But if Chicago finishes with a worse record and has a higher draft pick than Dallas, then Dallas has the right to swap picks. Okay, I got
there you.
See, I'm the cap genius on this podcast.
There you go. I love it.
That being said, Dallas did immediately waive Shiloh Heald, and they're doing that because they need roster spots for Satu Sabli and Alicia Gray, who are coming back this week. That was the reason why they traded Dana Evans. So Dana Evans is in Chicago. Stephanie Watts, who was a first-round pick this year as well, who was traded in the Gabby Williams trade, also got waived because the team Chicago needs roster spots because they have to bring back Lexi Brown. And I'm not going to sit here and explain the whole hardship thing because if you thought I was confused like 2 seconds ago, it's going to be way more confusing if I start doing that. But what they need to do is waive her and bring her back in like a week when they have more cap space to bring her back. So all these machinations leave us with Dana Evans on Chicago. She's there because she has a little bit more experience, a little bit more WNBA ready than Shiloh Heald. And it leaves Heald and Stephanie Watts, two first rounders in this year's draft, currently on the waiver wire. So if my explanation wasn't too confusing, what are your thoughts there, Christy?
Oh, man. No, it was very clear. You know, I just think that it's, first of all, super tough to comprehend that two first rounders are on the waiver wires. I feel so badly for them. And, you know, and I also feel badly for the GMs and coaches because it's not like they're doing that in a malicious way. It's a business and they're trying to make it in terms of what's best for the team and what's best for the team financially. And it is just so tough. It's so tough. And Lexi Brown had been waived, you know, a couple of weeks ago, came back, played great. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not about what these players are capable of doing. It's about the finances and fitting everyone into into a square, right? So it's like the round peg in a square shape, you know, sometimes, or the other way around, whatever. But that's just what it is. You know, it's not necessarily about what you can do as a player.
No.
It's about, you know, financially what teams can do with contracts. No. And it's just mind-boggling for GMs and coaches, I'm sure. And it's hurtful for these kids who, you know, had a little bit of a taste of the WNBA and now they're on the waiver wire. But as Lexi Brown can attest to, that doesn't mean that you're done, mm-hmm. right? It just means that there's a pause in play and maybe there's another chance for you with somebody else. So, you know, I'm sure they have explained that to those young women that this is what we have to do for right now, but that doesn't mean that's the end of your story in the league. And that to me is probably the hardest thing to sit down and tell somebody, you know, that's worked so hard to get there, made it, got drafted in the first round. And then, yeah, by the way, right now, this is what we have to do. Business wise. And that's tough, man. I don't envy that conversation, at all, especially, you know, knowing that, you know, they're probably crying. They're probably sitting there distraught and probably nothing that you're saying is going to make that moment any easier. But you have to say what you have to say. And so I don't envy that in the coaches and GMs and going through that kind of conversation with those kids.
Yeah, I don't envy it either. I also think that there's a certain amount of if you're competing for a championship, you don't tend to want rookies on the team. That's just like, I'm not saying that's not a comment on the quality of the rookie, right? It's just, if you've never played in the WNBA before, you're not as ready for what we're asking you to do as someone else who has, especially Shiloh Heald, who is 19 years old. She's one of the youngest draftees this year because she came over from Australia and this team is trying to win a championship and she's not, she's not quite ready to contribute to a championship level team. That doesn't mean she's a bad player. That just means she's not ready for it this year. Whereas someone like Dana Evans is is maybe a little bit more ready, because as we saw in her entire collegiate career, she's hit big shots, she's been in the big moments, and she's a little bit more mature. And those years between 19 and however old Dana Evans is, she's probably 22. Like, that's a big deal. That's a big developmental change between 19 and 22 rather right. than, you know, 25 and 28. Right. So right. It there is an aspect of we're competing for a title and we need something that you can't give us.
Right.
And it goes for Stephanie Watts. I mean, she was playing 14 minutes a game, so it's not like she wasn't good enough. However, I do want to criticize Chicago's scouting. Because they knew all of this, all of the things I just said, they knew coming into the season, like they knew that they were going to be trying to compete for a title. They knew what they had on their plate and they knew right. that they needed a backup point guard to play this year, not for the future. I mean, also in addition to having a future concern, like you needed a point guard that could play this year. And where they were in the draft, I think right. most of us would have told them that the most WNBA ready prospect you could get at that pick is Dana Evans. That's why we had her slotted. A lot of us had her slotted in at that pick. I think it's, yeah. I mean, I understand the appeal of heel. That rhymes.
Bars.
and I understand like the idea of it, but you knew you were going to try to compete for a title and you didn't set yourself up for that. And now you've kind of had to give up assets. And yeah. you really hope that you're better than Dallas this year, right? Like, that's what I'll be watching for. Like, I hope this season doesn't go belly up for Chicago. But if it does, it's going to be really funny because they're going to have to trade first round. You know, like, they're going to have to trade first round picks with Dallas. To me, I think it's just it's a failure of scouting and understanding what your needs are and what the person that can give you that is. And Stephanie Watts, too. Like, you have to, like, the Gabby Williams trade, like, Gabby Williams yeah. is a part of this team's future until this season when they had some sort of disconnect and she was dissatisfied with what was happening. And right. maybe the team didn't want to pay her next year. So then you recoup some value by bringing in a first rounder. Well, you just waived the first rounder.
Right.
So what was the point of even making that move?
There you know? You go. So, that's right.
I don't know. I think it's a failure of scouting for Chicago and a bit of poor planning. And of course, it doesn't matter if they win the championship, but it'll look bad if they don't.
Yeah, well, it's tough. I mean, who knew that Quigley and Parker would play in the first game and then not play for a stretch of games right fair. There? And that's, I mean, that's that chemistry. And like I said earlier about injuries, me hating them. That's another reason why, because I want to see Candace back at home in Chicago playing well and healthy and doing great things. So I know she's extremely frustrated. I mean, they had that back-to-back game with LA, those two games in Chicago, and lost both of them without Parker on the floor. So I know that did something to her. It's just tough. And I know she understands. It's not like she's, you know, in the doldrums because of that situation. I mean, her ankle was really badly sprained, right? So we understand that. But I mean, I know how fiercely competitive Candace Parker is. And I am so sure that she was waiting to play those games in Chicago, in a Chicago uniform, and, you know, against her sisters. Like, that's what she calls them. So I know that was difficult for her to not suit up and play in those games and not to have Quigley on the floor. That's been tough, too. And Sloot, I mean, Vandersloot is terrific. She's leading the league in assists for a reason, just over 7 assists per game. I mean, she's fantastic on the floor. But then, you know, when the pieces start falling, Dolson's not there. Parker's not there. Quigley's not there. It's like, oh, my gosh. You know, but she's still able to do what she's doing on the floor and making the players around her better, whoever they may be. So it's a tough hand, you know. Yeah. That they've been dealt in terms of those injuries and in and out players because of other situations and obligations. So I just, you know, hopefully James Wade and the group, you know, they'll bounce back and start stringing some wins together and getting some of the players back and healthy and see what they look like when they're all together. I think in the second half of the season, I've said that, you know, too, about the Washington Mystics, like once they have every single person there and healthy, ready to go, you know, it'll make a difference. I mean, Sidney Weiss is now out for the Mystics. So it's like, it's, you know, the ins and outs and the injuries and the situations that way. Super frustrating, but how can that benefit you in the second half of the year? And I think that's what you have to look at with teams like Chicago and teams like Washington and Phoenix, for that matter, with Taurasi and everybody being out and Bria Hartley. Second half of the season, what that will look like for those teams. I think that is something to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, you make a mistake and now you fix it. And it costs you that much. A third round pick is not that valuable, right, in this league. So they I think they're in a better spot than they were. I feel for Shyla Heal, but again, she's 19. She'll be back. She'll be back. I'm very positive that she'll be back. And I think Stephanie Watts will also be back soon. Maybe even this year. Because you never know. There's so many injuries in this year. And some of it goes back to something that we've said. And I think every podcast this season, it's going to be disjointed. It's going to be weird. And it's going to be feel a little stop and start at this beginning stage of the season. And I think that's where we're at. It doesn't help too that like some teams just like Dallas only played like two games. I think they played one game, had a week off. Now the Mystics had played four games, five games, and they have a week off.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, what are you going to do? That's a schedule, but it is a little weird and disjointed when that happens. So hopefully as the season goes on, players get healthier, we get a little bit more of a cohesive feel to the season, especially when we come back from the Olympic break.
Right.
The other team/game that I want to talk to you about, playing on something we talked about last week, Las Vegas and Connecticut. They played yesterday. No, yeah, Tuesday. You'll be hearing this on Thursday. We're recording this on Wednesday night. And the Wizards are actually in it with the Sixers. But that's not WNBA, so that's not what we're talking about. But that is interesting. So the Sun played the Aces, and the Sun won 74-67. Obviously, this follows the situation with Liz Cambage and Kurt Miller, and they made up at the beginning of the game.
Sure.
And Kurt apologized.
Yeah,
I don't think that mattered a whole lot to Liz. She put up 28 points on 11-17 from the field. It's one of her best games, really, in an Aces uniform. I think she looked great, and I think she should do that more often. So she played great, but the Suns still won. So I was wondering what your takeaway from that game was.
I mean, my takeaway was that Liz Cambage was waiting to play that game. While the apology and everything, that was civil, as it should have been. I think they, you know, had a nice discussion ahead of the game, and you love to see that. And again, we were talking about, you know, Brittany Griner's dunk being something that is inspirational for kids to see, but it's also good for kids to see something like that as well. You know, mistakes are going to be made. We're all human, and that's what it is. So I think for her to go out and go 11-17 from the floor and have a season high of those 28, because we know her career high in WNBA record is 53 points back a couple of years ago. You know, she has the ability to score the ball, and she got touches this time. I think, you know, she went into that game, I believe, averaging about 13 a game, and to go off like that and double that plus some, I thought she was very intentional with what she wanted to do offensively against Connecticut. But on the other side of it, for Connecticut to come away with the win, I thought that they played great, especially down the stretch. Jasmine Thomas was amazing again. She's really a force to be reckoned with. Jonquel Jones. I mean, Dawana Bonner. I mean, this is a team right now that is playing.
You're not going to mention one Terp on that list? Come on now.
And Brianna Jones, I was getting there.
Come on.
There are four Terps on that team, so yes, we know. But it was, I mean, just to have them playing so well, Gabe, they're playing great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to say amazed, because that's not the right word. I'm thrilled to see how well they've come together.
Yeah.
You know, in the absence of Alyssa Thomas and how different that makes them as a team, right? Before they played the Mystics, you know, I was talking to Mike Tebow about that and how different they look and what makes their team different now without Alyssa Thomas. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because she basically never came off the floor at Thomas. Alyssa Thomas never came off the floor, played huge minutes. the ball went through her. But he said, you know, there's a lot more spacing. You know, the ball is shared a lot more with Bonner being there now, who, you know, they didn't have Jonquel last year. So they have all these different pieces. And like we were just talking about how intriguing that is. But the way that they have all their pieces and how they're new to one another, like Bonner and Jonquel Jones are new to one another, the fact that they're playing at that level with great chemistry early on is impressive to see. And it's fun to watch that style of play. And Breonna Jones is playing great. I mean, this is obviously her best year statistically in the league. And, you know, she's getting more minutes. She got more minutes last year in the bubble. We get that. But I think now, you know, she's really coming into herself and coming into her game and the expectations of what she should be doing on the floor. And I think that's really been fun to watch as well. So I think that it's, you know, it's something that remains to be seen whether or not they can sustain that throughout the year. And I think there's no question that they will be able to because, you know, chemistry doesn't come and go.
Yeah. Right? Either. Once you got it, you got it.
Exactly. So the fact that they have it early is really something to keep an eye on for WNBA fans and Sun fans.
What I love about Connecticut, not just this team, but this franchise, is they have an identity. And I think that is kind of what we're getting at. Like, yeah, they have a lot of chemistry, but it's not built on Alyssa Thomas is an epitome of that, but so is Jasmin Thomas. So is Jonquel Jones. So is Bree Jones. Like, you have all these players that epitomize the toughness and the defensive togetherness that this team has built their franchise on. And that's the cornerstone of the franchise. And when you have something like that, that's when you start to see success as a repeating thing. It becomes a habit because you know what you're about. You know the things that you have to hit as a team. You got to do X, Y, or Z, and you know you're going to do it every year, year in, year out. And I think you look at the great franchises in basketball, in the WNBA and in the NBA, they all have identities. This is what we do. And I think Connecticut's built on the defensive end, on being on that string that they're so good at rotating. I don't think there's a better team in the league at getting defensive rotations in than the Connecticut Sun. And I think, it, you know, if Alyssa Thomas was here, I think the thing we were saying last year was Alyssa Thomas, it breeds all that off of her. And now she's not there. And you see, well, okay, now they have Jonquel Jones, who's an MVP candidate, who I think is going to be in first or second MVP this year. And she does everything for them. You know, she on the defensive end, she stops shots at the rim. She'll get out and switch on guards. She does everything on the defensive end. And on the offensive end, it's the same thing. Like, she'll hit threes. Whatever you need from her is what she does. And I think just that versatility and that commitment to defense as a franchise is what's pushing them. And I think it'll lead to another deep playoff run. And I'm sure at some point someone out there is going to say, oh, this Connecticut team doesn't have enough, or they can't win without Alyssa Thomas, or they're just a bunch of role players or something stupid. And we're all going to have to hear about the disrespect again, but not on this podcast. We respect
not on this podcast, but I'll tell you what, now this Connecticut team, you know, they are built with a mental toughness that, you know, once they have it, like I said, once they have it, they have it. And I think they have it this year. And you know, yes, you would love to see Alyssa Thomas in the mix with Jonquel Jones and Tawana Bonner and Bree Jones playing the way she is and Jasmin Thomas and all the pieces. But this is what they are this year, and it's pretty darn good. And when they get Thomas back next year, that's when we get to see that combo. But for right now, this Connecticut team is for real, and they look great together in terms of their chemistry.
Yep, and I want to see this matchup in particular again. We saw it last year in the semifinals, and it was awesome. And I think if we see it again this year in the semifinals, because that's when we get series, it'll again be awesome, because this is a fantastic matchup, especially now with both teams running a two big system. This is a really throwback kind of game, but you don't. In theory, it is, but you don't have throwback bigs like Jonquel can step out. Liz can step out. Asia is now developing a 3-point shot, and you have Bree Jones, who, I mean, she is traditional. She gets down low, but she can do a little bit more than that too. So I love the matchup. I think it's going to be, I hope it's going to be something we can see in the playoffs, because these two teams are, it's a heavyweight match.
Yeah.
I want to point out something just in case Bill Laimbeer is listening. So the Las Vegas Aces 5-3 on the season, in their five wins, they shoot almost 15 threes a game and they make 37.8% of them. In their losses, they shoot about 11 threes per game and they only make 24% of them. So this goes back to the constant criticism that we on WNBA Twitter have of the Las Vegas Aces of just shoot more threes. If you shoot more threes, things tend to go better for you guys. They were 0-for-5 in the last game. And to me, I'm just like, try it. Just try it. See how it feels. Just try taking a bunch and you'll see if it goes well for you. That's my soapbox. I won't say anything else about the 3-point percentages from Las Vegas.
Hey, stats don't lie. Stats don't lie. You know, it's not like you're just making that up. I mean, if that's what it is, then, you know, put it to use, put it to good use.
Stats don't lie, but people can use stats to lie.
That's true too.
Anything else you want to get into from, the past week of WNBA action?
I just love that there were, you know, a ton of overtime games. Mm-hmm. I just love the excitement of the league right now. You know, New York is one of those young teams who, you know, are trying to turn the corner. Teams just trying to get healthy and gain that chemistry. I just think we're at a great spot right now. And understanding that in about 3.5 weeks, you're going to be taking a break for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think the momentum. Say it again.
That's in 3 weeks?
Maybe a little more than that. 3.5. Maybe it's a month. Maybe, oh, you know. God. Like, yeah, at the beginning of July. I know, right? But I think for where we are right now, I think it's just thrilling to see these players playing the way that they're playing, and just laying it all on the line. You know, Leija Clarendon, you know, got waived, came back, and was crazy good in Minnesota. And then Lexi Brown got waived, came back, crazy good. You know, these players, they, you know, I don't think they get enough credit for staying ready in a lot of different circumstances, regardless of whether they're rookies or have been in the league some years now. I just think the resilience of these women is epic. And the way that they are just tremendous examples for all of us is amazing to watch. And that's why I love it. And I know, you know, viewership is up 45% mm-hmm. this year for a reason. I mean, the skill set and the product is terrific. But at the same time, you know, I think what the league stands for is also a pillar to the success and why more people are watching.
Yep.
And they're watching a great game. They're watching great players play it. The best in the world. Okay, let's be clear. So to me, that's just a pulse of where I am feeling, what I am feeling, and where I am with my thought process on what's been going on in the league, and just looking forward to the rest of it and the Commissioner's Cup and all the other exciting, you know, intangibles that are going to be moving forward as players come in, and see if who comes back in the second half. Like, is Emma Mieseman coming back? Like, we don't know. Like, there's so many things that we don't know. But keeping us on the edge of our seat. And, you know, like I was on Kia Nurse's shot, you know, I almost popped a hammy trying, you know, jumping up on that one. So, I mean, the whole league has that level of excitement to it. And that's what makes it great.
And shouts, and we don't have time to talk about the Atlanta Dream because I do want to watch the fourth quarter of this Wizards game. But shouts to the Atlanta Dream, because I think they epitomize a lot of what you just said. Toughness. Their coach left. Their president of basketball operations got fired. A whole new ownership group, new stadium, brand new everything. Everything's in flux in Atlanta. They're still winning ball games. Have a 1.6 net rating, fourth best net rating in the league. That Courtney Williams doing Courtney Williams like things. So you gotta tip your hats to Atlanta for being tough and staying ready and not. They don't care. They don't care about what the obstacles in front of them. They're gonna try to win games and. They've done that so far, so I'm really happy for them, and I will be exploring a little bit more of what Courtney Williams is doing in a YouTube video soon that I have to do. It's just there's been too much news.
I know that's right. No, she's a stone cold killer. That step back the other day, I mean, my goodness, like just legit. And I just love the fire because, you know, running back, she was like, I'm a bad girl or something. She said, I was like, right. I was like, you're right.
That sounds about right.
I was like, that's the bar. Because listen, that was tough. That was good stuff. So I know we're going to see more of it because it's like every week is like another building block.
Mm-hmm. we're going to get something crazy this week. Don't worry.
I know it. But as always, it's been a blast chatting with you, my friend, right here, courtside with Christy and Gabe on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristyWScott51. And Gabe, where can people find you?
At Gabe_Ibrahim on Twitter. Make sure you follow at Her Hoop Stats for everything. Although you should do that. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm just going to assume you do that. Sure. And then on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, you can find me at Ball and Order, where I talk about men's basketball, which is also exciting. So
it is.
There's a lot. There's just a lot of stuff going on. That's where you can catch me.
That's right. No, great stuff. Always. All hoops all the time. Courtside is the best place to be sitting for all of that. Hey, more stuff ahead next week right here on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. Gabe, I'll see you then.